get any good up. All right, bring the music back. Okay, let's try it again. Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Welcome to Wild and Wet Wednesday. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. A little bit later tonight, I'm going to come to the defense. He doesn't need it. Of Alan Grayson, the representative from the Orlando area in Florida. Boy, is he being attacked. Oh, my God. And the person running against him, holy jumping, well, Jesus, you know, it's astonishing. That's a little bit later tonight. What else we got on tap tonight? Don't forget, tomorrow and Friday, our good friend Brad Friedman will be filling in while Kathy and I take a couple days off here. Have you confirmed, Brad? He's all set to go. Oh, good. Okay. I want you to play nice. We also have some information about Joe Miller and his wife. He's the Alaska Republican Senate candidate, you know, that speaks out vigorously against anything having to do with the federal government. Oh, my God. What else do we have tonight? I'll tell you what. Let's do a economics affairs report here right away from Prairie 2. His title, his subject line tonight, there's no champagne in the cheap seats, not even peanuts anymore.
Ah!
Prairie 2 writes, a world currency war has broken out as countries scramble to keep their currencies from collapsing. Japan has cut interest rates to zero in an effort to pump out enough yen to counter its rise against U.S. dollar, and has been selling yen for U.S. dollars. India is experiencing a high rate of inflation as foreign currency flows in. And a long list of countries from Colombia to Israel have been trying to drive down the value of their own currency by buying other currencies. Let me digress a minute. It's very difficult for me to understand how this works, too, but I will guarantee you, Truth Seeker, that there's an awful lot of capitalist pigs who make an awful lot of money in manipulating currencies. Back to Prairie 2. The U.S. sees itself as victim of all this currency manipulation, especially by China, but the fact remains that our Federal Reserve has been printing trillions of new dollars and lending those dollars to the Wall Street banks at zero interest. This is intended to jumpstart the U.S. economy, but has only pumped up a market bubble as the banks engage in proprietary trading. That's trading that's none of your damn business. This is only allowed because Clinton and the Republicans decriminalized this activity with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act after 65 years of successfully keeping Wall Street under control. This was back in the late 90s, and we really needed another Great Depression after so long without one. China's premier, Wen Jiabao, speaking in Brussels, warned that forcing Beijing to revalue its currency would lead to, his words, a disaster for the world. Ooh. While China has, in theory, removed controls over its currency, the renminbi has only appreciated 2% against U.S. dollar, while the disparity is really 40%. At the same time, the renminbi has fallen against the euro by 11%, and the Europeans are feeling the pinch. The U.S. dollar is falling, and gold has set yet another new record at $1,349, up $9 from yesterday. Somebody's making a lot of money on that, too. Glenn Beck? Treasuries are also down, and this is increasing pressure for the Federal Reserve to engage in what's called quantitative easing. Or more simply, they want to tinker with supply and demand by buying a couple of trillion in U.S. debt instruments to reduce the supply. None of that free market nonsense when it comes to protecting the wealth held by the upper classes. Well, of course not. The lower and middle classes can be wiped out in a heartbeat, and it will be a matter of, quote, personal responsibility. Right? Like the guy whose house burned down? Huh? But we must protect the wealthy because they create all the jobs. Millions and millions of jobs. In China and India, of course. They've used Walmart and the other big box stores to wipe out the entire merchant class in this country. They used the retail monopoly they created from that to force 40,000 factories to move production out of the country or to put them out of business entirely. We are unwilling entrants in the new extreme sport of flat earth economics. There is no prediction the course we will follow in our headlong rush toward the abyss or who will go over the edge first. The upper class, however, will just be watching the blood and gore from their luxury boxes. The champagne is chilled and the caviar is fresh. So let the games begin. PrairieNumeral2.com. See, Bruce Enberg, who is Prairie 2, he handles his frustration by writing and sharing some of his writings with us. I, on the other hand, am incapable of handling my frustration. So I get so angry at what's happening. I never really paid too much attention to the so-called wealthy class in this country, the upper class. Occasionally, I might inadvertently bump up against it. Sometimes, more than a bump, I have had a couple of experiences over my lifetime where I might have gotten an invitation to something that pulled the curtain back for me and let me see what the super wealthy consider to be a normal lifestyle. But those times have been very rare. And it was more or less for me like going to a museum or a zoo or a performance of the, the New York Philharmonic. My life has pretty much consisted of being thoroughly ensconced in either the lower working class or the lower middle class, if there's a difference between those two. And I never really gave much attention to the wealthy people. I never hated them. I just figured that, you know, they lived in a different realm, a realm that I would never enter into. They were there, kind of like tuberculosis germs. I knew they existed, but they weren't affecting me. But you know what? Starting with the theft of the election on December 12th, 2000, and continuing for the past 10 years now, with a few interspersed memories from back in the late 80s, I have come to the point where I hate these sons of bitches with a passion that is scary. Now, by these sons of bitches, I mean the filthy capitalist creeps who have drained everything they could drain out of this economy, this country, this society. They continue opening veins all over the country. They are bleeding us white, which is kind of weird for people who are not Caucasian to begin with. And they laugh about it. And it's sport to them. And kids go hungry. And old people go without medications. And young people can't get proper education because of these parasitic leeches. I'll tell you, the day will come, as surely as night follows day, the day will come when there will be an equalizing. I know that. I feel that in my bones. I may not be alive to see it happen. It may be that far down the road, but it is coming.
Dietrich. Not one of my favorite.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
You're old enough to kill, but not for voting.
21 past the hour. Fox News is such a collection of, take your pick, either psychopaths hell-bent on destroying the country and establishing the kind of rancid capitalism that certainly brings the country to an end, or the people you see on camera, especially this crew in the morning, are nothing but half-witted, ignorant stooges for the Fox Empire. I tend to think it's probably a bit of both, with the emphasis on the latter. Guess what happened? In the first place, we know that Fox News is the very first network to be a wholly owned propaganda arm of a specific party, the Republican Party. Or, if you choose to see it the other way, the Republican Party has become the operative arm of the fascist organization that runs Fox News. Either way, it works. But anyway, Fox News had a report on... was it this morning? I think it was this morning. That the Los Angeles Police Department is buying 10,000 jetpacks. You know, you slide your arms into it. The jetpack, you know, you fly around all by yourself at a cost of $100,000 each. And I saw a piece of video where this crew of morons that sits there in the morning on the couch, Brian Kilmeade and who's the other one? Gretchen Carlson, is she a piece of work or what? And Steve Doocy. I would watch him if I had the inclination just to see somebody with a name like that, Steve Doocy. I mean, that's got to be. Anyway, this crew got on the air and said that the city of Los Angeles had ordered 10,000 jetpacks for its police and fire departments, the price $100,000 per unit. And so they could zip around the freeways and put out fires. You know, it's like a science fiction-y kind of thing. It's like a Woody Allen kind of thing. You know, maybe someday, 100 years from now, we might really have them. But anyway, even while reporting this Fox News bunch of... puppets couldn't believe the story. Are you kidding? Asked Brian Kilmeade. Can we afford that? Wondered Gretchen Carlson. Can we afford that? The story came from a supermarket tabloid, the Weekly World News. That's the one that puts out stories about Bat Boy found in cave or 10 New Commandments found and stories like Death Cured. You know, that's the Weekly World News. So here sit these three morons this morning showing videos from old movies and from a company in New Zealand that is actually testing these things. But they've already got the story from the Weekly World News. City of Los Angeles has ordered 10,000 jetpacks. The price, $100,000 per unit. The L.A. PD chief Charlie Beck had to immediately go on television and said, we haven't bought any jetpacks. In fact, we haven't even bought squad cars for the past 2 years. They don't have any money. They don't have any money. I don't know why I share that with you. I just find it kind of weirdly amusing. It is so typical of these phlegm eaters on Fox News in the morning. You know, we're going to have to stop watching Curious George and what's that lion one Molly watches sometimes? Between the Lions. We're going to have to switch off of public television. And occasionally we watch local ABC affiliate here and then switch over and watch Good Morning America. But I think it's time for us to watch Fox News. I think it would give me material for this program that would liven things up a bit. You think? I would rather report on Gretchen Carlson and Steve Doocy and the other clown and talk about what they consider to be news, what they consider to be rational. Oh, wait a minute. No, I don't think so. Never mind. We'll just continue to do what we normally do, and that is occasionally somebody will send me a story like this. Al Babe sent this one. That's the writer and artist formerly known as Al Gordon. He is now Al Babe. He sent this to me, and I guess what we should do is just do that. We cruise along, ignoring as best we can these filthy rat bastards at the Fox Murdoch Corporation, Fascism Central, and just occasionally report on these stories. Weekly World News. This is a standard Fox News fact-checking for sure. Well, as sort of a letdown, I sure would like to see jetpacks flying around. You know, if they get down to where I could afford them, like, I don't know, $59.95, or what is it? What's the price of one of our subscriptions? $59.60? I would buy one. We'll be right back. Each new Supreme Court session. And so this past Monday, such an event occurred. One of the issues they're taking up this year is this issue of freedom of speech versus the right of privacy of families of people who have had to bury their sons or daughters after the sons or daughters came home in coffins from the capitalist wars halfway around the world. And the Westboro Baptist Church, run by a ghoul named Fred Phelps, a church, so-called, it's really a, I think it's a group of demons that, you know, the Catholic Church created demons and Satan and hell, and I think these people were created by that form of Christianity, and they were birched or farted up out of the deepest bowels of hell. These people just really disgust me. I mean, 60 members, most of whom are related one way or another to Fred Phelps. I think his children go there, his sister's children, which are his too, his mother's children, which are his children too, his father's sisters, mothers, children, which are all his, too. Yeah, you get the point. The father of a dead Marine, has filed a civil lawsuit against Westboro Baptist Church. It is now being argued before the Supreme Court. The attorney for the Westboro Baptist Church is the daughter of the preacher, Fred Phelps, who is really her own mother since whatever. So the argument is the sides to this case are being presented in the Supreme Court this week. And I'm sure you've seen the picture, the posters, these cretins standing around. God hates fags. We're glad your soldier's dead. Your son should burn in hell. Their theory being that as long as the United States tolerates the idea that some people may be homosexual, some people may be heterosexual, or all people may be all sexualities, given the right kind of environment, you know, sexuality, a lot of people believe, I happen to be one of them, sexuality is on a continuum. I don't think anybody is completely gay or completely straight. I really don't. Like I say, given the, if that is going to be defined by who we have sex with. Now, there are other ways to define it, but nobody in this sick society defines it any other way. It's who are you banging? Who's banging you? That's how that determination is made, when in fact, homosexuality, heterosexuality, eroticism of any sort, and I believe this, is on a continuum. You start way over here, and you may have heterosexuality exclusive. And then you move all the way across over and come over here, and you have homosexuality exclusively. But most of us reside somewhere on that continuum, and given the right circumstances, not coercion, just the right circumstances, people have not just the ability, but the inclination to kind of, you'll pardon the expression, slide along that continuum. Okay? Now, to me, that's very workable. It makes real sense. But not to the gay haters in this country. So I get this email from Steve in Laverne, California. Steve writes, Mike, you know, thinking about brain dead Fred and the Phelps freaks, I can't help but thinking, if you were to take the homosexual aspect out of this, would this be a freedom of speech issue? Let's say if Muslims or some other group were to protest at the funerals of soldiers and had placards that read, "Glad he's dead," or "Death to all soldiers," or "Blow them away," or "Hope they all die," etc., etc., would the Muslims, using them as an example, be allowed to protest in the first place? I seriously doubt it. It's more likely they'd be arrested for incitement or harassment or not having the proper permit to protest. But being that the objects of venom by these six scorpions happen to be gay folk, that seems to make it an issue of free speech. Yeah. Just wondering, Steve in Laverne, California. Yeah, that's, you know, you got to wonder, don't you? Huh? You got to wonder about the good point, Steve. Good point. Seymour Hersh was interviewed a week or so ago by Terry Gross on National Public Radio's Fresh Air. Terry Gross happens to be the best interviewer in the history of radio. There is no question about that. I've been listening to Terry Gross for, what, 15 years or more. Fresh Air, it's a great program. It's difficult for me to hear it now because they moved it, unless I go online, they moved it from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to 7 o'clock in the evening here in the Atlanta market. But in an interview a week or so ago, Terry Gross was talking with investigative journalist Seymour Hersh. And she asked him if, as he continues to investigate the Bush administration, she asked him if more people were coming forward to talk to him now that the president and vice president are no longer in power. Hersh replied that though, quote, a lot of people that have told me in the past year, in the last year of Bush, call me next February, not many people had talked to him. He implied that they were still scared of Cheney. Huh? Terry Gross said, quote, are you saying that you think Vice President Cheney is still having a chilling effect on people who might otherwise be coming forward? Hersh answered, I'll make it worse, adding that he believes Cheney put people back in government to stay behind in order to tell him what's going on and perhaps even do sabotage. This is what Hersh said, quote, I'll make it worse. I think he's put people I think he's got people left in government. They call it a stay behind. It's sort of an intelligence term of art. When you leave a country and, you know, you've driven out the, you know, you've lost the war, you leave people behind. It's a stay behind that you can continue to contact, have contact with, to do sabotage, whatever you want to do. Cheney's left a stay behind. He's got people in a lot of agencies that still tell him what's going on, particularly in defense, obviously. Also in the National Security Agency, there's still people that talk to him. He still knows what's going on. Can he still control policy up to a point? Probably. He's still there. He's still a presence. End quote. Now, we talked about this before. Remember, towards the end of the Bush-Cheney regime, all sorts of people had their appointed jobs converted to civil service jobs. Appointed jobs that were handled by the Bush-Cheney crime family. And they were switched from being appointments to civil service status, which means it would take, you know, a comet slamming into the earth to dislodge these roaches. The idea that Cheney would seed the government with trusted contacts is not surprising. As Hirsch noted in his talk with Terry Gross, Cheney has, quote, been around forever, end quote. Well, yeah, he's a goddamn vampire. And as Hirsch pointed out, Cheney, quote, understands bureaucracy much better than anyone in government, end quote. In 2006, Robert Dreyfus reported for the American Prospect that when Cheney helped staff the Bush administration in 2001, he put together what was described as a core of hardline acolytes that served as his eyes and ears all over the federal bureaucracy. Officials at the time called them Dick Cheney's spies. And additionally, before leaving office, the Bush administration aggressively placed political appointees into permanent civil service positions as part of a process known as burrowing. Some of the burrowed former political appointees have close ties to Cheney, like Jeffrey Salmon, who was a speechwriter for Cheney when he served as defense secretary. In July, he was named deputy director of resource management in the Energy Department's Office of Science. So the beat goes on. And the only way this is going to stop, of course, is when these people no longer have Dick Cheney to report to, which should be an imminent occasion, given the fact, is he out of intensive care yet, or is he like, has he kind of disappeared? Like, who's the Prime Minister of Israel who has been in a coma for Ariel Sharon, who's been in a persistent vegetative state now for how many years? Five, six? It's been a long time. I don't even know if Cheney's still alive. You know, unless they're keeping him alive by mechanical means, like that thing that forces blood through his body.
Liberal helping of truth, it's more Mike Malloy.
You know if you qualify for the credit card bailout
shut up, go away. 10 before the hour. What was that? Fox News breaking in? From prisonplanet.com, a book written by Ben Bagdikian, the Media Monopoly 6th edition, yada yada. It is fairly. Now wait a minute. Let me make sure. Okay. Back in 1983, about 50 corporations controlled the vast majority of all news media in the United States, right? And today, ownership of media, news media, has been concentrated in the hands of just six media corporations. Six. Now, these corporate behemoths control most of what we watch, hear, and read almost every single day. They own television networks, cable channels, movie studios, newspapers, magazines, publishing houses, music labels, and even many of our favorite websites. But sadly, most of us don't even stop to think about who's feeding them these endless hours of garbage. Most Americans don't really seem to care about who owns the media. But we should. The average American watches 153 hours of television a month. Oh, my God, really? In fact, most Americans begin to feel physically uncomfortable if they go too long without watching or listening to something. Well, I like to put music on during the day when I'm not doing anything around the house. Sadly, it says here, most Americans have become absolutely addicted to news entertainment, and the ownership of all that news entertainment that we crave is being concentrated in fewer and fewer hands each year. The six corporations that collectively control U.S. media today are Time Warner, Walt Disney, Viacom, Murdoch's News Corp, CBS, and NBC Universal. Which is about to become Comcast, you know. These so-called Big Six absolutely dominate news and entertainment in the United States. But even those areas of the media that the Big Six do not completely control are becoming increasingly concentrated. For example, Clear Channel now owns over 1,000 radio stations across the United States, some of which carry this program. Companies like Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft are increasingly dominating the internet. But it's the Big Six that are the biggest concerns. When you control what Americans watch, hear, and read, you gain a great deal of control over what they think. They don't call it programming for nothing! Back in 1983, it was bad enough that only 50 corporations dominated U.S. media, but since that time, power over the media has rapidly become concentrated in the hands of fewer and fewer people. Six colossal media giants. And I have before me here, which we're not going to be able to get in this hour, and I've got some other stuff planned for the next two, but who controls what? News Corporation, Dow Jones and Company, Fox Television Station, New York Post, Fox Searchlight Pictures, BeliefNet, Fox Business Network, Fox Kids Europe, Fox News Channel, Fox SportsNet, Fox Television Network, FX, My Network TV, MySpace, News Limited, Phoenix Info News Channel, Phoenix Movies Channel, Sky Perfect TV, Speed Channel, Star TV India, Star TV Taiwan, Star World, Times Higher Education Supplement Magazine, Times Literary Supplement Magazine, Times of London, 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment, 20th Century Fox International, 20th Century Fox Studios, 20th Century Fox Television, B Sky, B DirecTV, DirecTV, The Wall Street Journal, Fox Broadcasting, Fox Interactive Media, Foxtel, HarperCollins Publishers, National Geographic Channel, National Rugby League, News Interactive, News Outdoor, Radio Veronica, Reagan Books, Sky Italia, Sky Radio Denmark, Sky Radio Germany, Sky Radio Netherlands, Star, and Zondervan. That's just Fox. That's Murdoch. Now, of course, I could give you NBC Universal and CBS and so on and so forth, but suffice it to say, these gigantic corporations don't exist to tell the truth to the American people. Their primary existence is either to make money or make you forget, or in the process, both. In the process of polluting our minds, both. They're not going to do anything to threaten their relationship with their big advertisers, like these huge pharmaceutical industrial mega companies that literally spend billions on advertising. And one way or another, these gigantic media corporations are always going to express the ideologic viewpoints of their owners. What do you think the ideologic viewpoint of Rupert Murdoch is? Has he not demonstrated that he is a fascist? What do you think the ideologic viewpoint of NBC Universal is, where it concerns their media control? Have they not demonstrated that they are a capitalist organization that cares not a whit about, you know, putting garbage on the air, but also doing things like totally polluting through their GE subsidiary, totally polluting, or I should reverse that, their parent company, totally polluting the Hudson River? I think what we'll do, Kathy, is post this at the website. People need to see this. This is not necessarily new, but how many people understand what they consider to be, well, I have freedom of choice, Mike. I can watch anything I want. All right, stick around. We have miles to go before we sleep. I'm Mike Malloy. Tomorrow and Friday, Brad Friedman will be sitting in for me. So be nice. Play nice, okay? We always like it when Brad Friedman substitutes because he brings an element of class to this program, sorely lacking when I'm behind the microphone. So thanks, Brad. Kathy rolled her eyes. I'm not saying what I do is not entertaining, Kathy, on a gut street level. Brad is just a little, you know, a little classier. He goes more for the substance. I go for the sizzle. Thank you, Brad. He'll be sitting in Thursday and Friday. The next item here comes from both Crooks and Liars and Howie Klein, who has a website, Down with Tyranny. And it's about, I want to spend a little time here talking about Congressman Alan Grayson from Florida, Central Florida. We've had him on the program, what, once, twice, Kathy? I'm not sure. And we learned last week that under intense pressure from Alan Grayson and a few other determined congressional and executive watchdogs, Bank of America decided to join these gangsters, J.P. Morgan Chase and GMAC, in suspending foreclosure processes in 23 states. As we mentioned, I think last night, processes that, quote, weren't reviewed properly, end quote. Oh, yeah, okay. How many illegal foreclosures have already forced families out of their homes? Nobody knows. Even the people forced out into the street or in with their relatives or living in their van. This is what capitalism does. Remember, the only reason this happened is because of capitalism. It has nothing to do with anything other than the capitalist banking system. The lying, cheating, thieving, stealing capitalist banking system. And it's why Marcy Kaptur, about a year and a half ago, told her constituents to stay put in their homes if some crooked bankster tried to force them out. Crooked bankster is redundant. Even the New York Times has taken note of this filthy scandal. And I think we mentioned it earlier this week, but this is what the Times said. The foreclosure machinery that has forced millions of Americans out of their homes is beginning to seize up. Some lenders and their lawyers are accused of cutting corners in their pursuit of rapid home repossessions. Cutting corners. To the capitalist parasites, it's cutting corners. To families, moms and dads and kids, preschoolers, elementary school, middle school, high schoolers, it's not cutting corners. It's having your whole goddamn life upended. Ruined! So some pig can make even more money than he's already making. Jesus! Rapid home repossessions. Gimme, 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 gimme! I lied to you when I gave you the loan! Told you it's going to be X percent and it's Y percent, you dumb bastard. You should have read the fine print, right? Gimme! Gimme! So now... I'm sorry, lost my head there. So now evictions are expected to slow, according to housing analysts, as state and national law enforcement officials shine a light on, you know, like bringing some light to an otherwise dark, dank, cockroach-filled little area of home mortgage foreclosures, huh? As law enforcement officials shine a light on questionable foreclosure methods revealed by two of the country's biggest home lenders in the last 2 weeks. Why do you suppose they revealed that the people employed by them were lying, conniving bastards, huh? The backlog in so many state courts because of home foreclosures has brought the entire state court machinery to a standstill. Judges in Florida have said to the people who are losing their homes, shut up, you didn't make your payments, get this goddamn case out of my courtroom. It just goes on all the time. Why do you suppose that they ratted themselves out? Is it because it is getting so bad that these filthy pigs are trying to avoid personal criminal charges? You know, the corporation, the bloodless corporation that has as much freedom of speech protection now as you do. The corporation usually takes the hit, but maybe some of these banksters are starting to think, oh, damn, they're going to get me. Even lenders with no known problems are expected to approach defaulting homeowners more cautiously and look more aggressively for resolutions short of outright eviction, according to the New York Times. So what about the people already having had their lives slammed to the pavement, kicked to the curb? Huh? What about the 9 and 10 and 12 and 13-year-olds who have been utterly and absolutely traumatized? Their parents lose their jobs. The family loses their house. The mom and dad are in constant tension, fighting with each other. Maybe one of them has taken up drinking. What are these kids supposed to... Oh, come on, Mike, calm down. What are the kids supposed to do? Nothing. They're supposed to quietly go off in the corner and die. The banksters would like to see an increase in suicides that gets all these people out of the way. J.P. Morgan Chase, GMAC, Bank of America. Can you people please just go kill yourselves? We don't want to hear about your family got evicted. Get out of the way. We're capitalists and you're giving us bad publicity. Go die. Okay, wait a minute. Stay alive a little bit longer and we can get your kids in the military. Stricken neighborhoods, the Times writes, across the country could benefit with the evictions being slowed. One big factor undermining home sales is fear of a large number of foreclosed homes coming to the market. Well, yeah, if the foreclosures are delayed, housing prices might find a floor. That's right. Let the housing prices find a floor. And then we can start this all over again. And after another round of suckers buys into this scam, then we can start the foreclosures again. See how this works? Foreclosures delayed. How about foreclosures ended? You know, Kathy and I do not face foreclosure. And never will. And that's because of situations, choices that we made. And the fact that we refused to allow ourselves to be conned or lied to. Oh, 10 years ago, when we bought the house we're living in now. Oh, yeah, we were told, hey, you want an interest-only loan? Hey, do you want a balloon note? Hey, why are you buying that house? We can get you one three times as expensive. Huh? What do you want? What do you want? Yeah, step up, step up. Hiya, hiya. Everybody step up. See the bearded lady. See the elephant man. And we just said no to all of the sons of bitches. But in spite of that, even the people who did take advantage of those offers made by these scum sucking banksters, I would say leave them in their homes. Leave them alone. Even the people who might have known, hey, look at this. Hot damn. They're going to screw us. We'll screw them. Leave them alone. Leave them alone. Let them stay in their houses. We'll be right back. The hour. So as more defaulting homeowners become aware of the lenders' problems, they're expected to hire lawyers and challenge the proceedings against them. And if completed foreclosures were not properly done, families who bought the troubled homes could be vulnerable to claims by the former owners. You see how this works? Huh? All these, I won't say every single person who bought a foreclosed home was a predator looking to profit by somebody else's misfortune, but a large number of them were. Well, guess what, you speculating bastards? It may turn out that $250,000 house you got for $89,000, right? And when you moved in, there were still traces of the family that had been tossed to the curb. Guess what? You may have to give it back. Ooh! Well, that's just not fair, is it? Huh? A Apparently alarmed about that possibility, one of the major title insurance companies, Old Republic National Title, has sent a bulletin to agents saying that, quote, until further notice, end quote, it would not insure title to properties foreclosed upon by GMAC Mortgage, the country's fourth largest home lender and one of the two big lenders at the center of this current rip-off, scam, scheme, lying, fraudulent bankster operation. Huh? How about that? So if you're listening to the program and you're a speculator and you squarfed up a couple of properties and it's being insured by your title insurance is being provided by Old Republic National Title, guess what? You're going to wind up like the guy in Tennessee whose house burned down. Huh? Nothing! GMAC declined to comment for this article with the New York Times, and Old Republic National Title Insurance did not return calls looking for comment. GMAC has acknowledged legal missteps. Eh? Legal missteps in processing mortgages, and J.P. Morgan Chase has acknowledged the possibility of missteps. And both have suspended all foreclosures in the 23 states where they need a court's approval. In the states where they don't need a court's approval, they continue to kick people to the curb. This is what capitalism does. The only break on capitalism is a strong regulatory system within the government of the area in which the capitalist predators are operating. They are like they're like cannibals. And unless somebody is standing on the corner with a Kalashnikov waiting for them to move in on a family, move in on a community, and shoot them, if there's not an armed guard on the corner, these predatory capitalistic pigs continue to feed, continue to devour people, continue their vampirism and their cannibalism. Am I being too graphic? Then you come up with a better description. What do you call it? GMAC has acknowledged legal missteps. And because it's the capitalist corporate organization, oh, well, okay, the judge says, oh, you had some missteps, no problem. But let a family come in that have seen their 99 weeks of unemployment run out, their retirement money gone, their savings gone, they've got three kids. Let that family go into a court and say, please don't turn us out on the street. We made a few missteps. Oh, for Christ's sake, what do you think will happen to the family? Get out of your house! But, sir, we have a baby. God. In the case of J.P. Morgan Chase, they acknowledge the possibility of missteps. That's 56,000 foreclosures by J.P. Morgan Chase alone. GMAC declined to provide a number. According to the Times, attorneys general in half a dozen states are demanding action or opening investigations. The Treasury Department said Thursday it was asking regulators to, quote, look into these troubling developments, end quote. So Alan Grayson, representative from Florida, Democrat, said, quote, we're seeing a fundamental breakdown in the system because no one cared that much about getting things right, end quote. And about a week ago, Grayson unsuccessfully asked the Florida Supreme Court to halt all foreclosures in that state. That's according to the Times. Now, of course, Grayson was viciously slandered again and again by Fox News for having the temerity to interfere. I mean, you know, he's just a congressman. What the hell is he doing? However, after Grayson got Florida to act, other states did likewise. There's more here. Just stick around. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. We'll be right back.
speakers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. So Alan Grayson, Republican, oh my God, Democrat from Central Florida around Orlando, has been busting his body parts in order to expose what the banksters are doing, the lies, the deception, the cheating in their greed and filth to get people out of the houses that the banking industry conned them into taking to begin with a couple of years ago. So, other states now are trying to follow Grayson's example. Florida, Connecticut Attorney General Richard Blumenthal ordered a moratorium on all foreclosures by all banks for 2 months. California Attorney General Jerry Brown ordered J.P. Morgan Chase to prove it is following the law before it continues foreclosures in California. And according to, I think, the Times, in Connecticut, Blumenthal said in a statement that he is investigating J.P. Morgan Chase and Ally, formerly GMAC. Ally is that really slick, they have those really slick commercials on television with the kids where the guy in the gray suit keeps jerking the kids around, right? That's Ally Bank, huh? They jerk more than kids around, don't you, you sons of bitches? So Blumenthal said in a statement in Connecticut he's investigating Ally, that's formerly GMAC, which is the recipient of a $17 billion federal bailout. Oh, God. Blumenthal, the Connecticut Attorney General, said the actions of J.P. Morgan Chase and Ally are, quote, a possible fraud on the court, undermining the integrity of the legal process. Oh, my God. And consumers' ability to fight foreclosures. He went on, this freeze should stop a foreclosure steamroller based on defective documents and enable effective remedies, end quote, Blumenthal. So when you watch those commercials, those really cute commercials, you know that mean, miserable man in the gray suit and the gray hair? Oh, you want an ice cream cone? No, you can't have one. Here, what do you want? You want toys or do you want an onion? You know, and then the little kids answer. I realize it's a commercial, but the subtext, the hidden message is that these sons of bitches treat their customers the same way. Oh, I know. The guy in the commercial is not supposed to be representing Ally Bank. He's supposed to be representing other people. And then Ally Bank comes to the rescue. And the voiceover comes on. Hey, you know, nobody wants to be treated like that. But that's exactly what they're doing. To the point that a state attorney general has to order them to stop foreclosures. Isn't irony just, I mean, isn't it just, doesn't just saturate every little nook and cranny in society right now, huh? Does it? I mean, how can people breathe from the irony? Now, Michael Moore, and we mentioned this earlier in the week, he published at his website an open letter to these bumbling, inefficient, bedwetting, thumb-sucking Democrats who have power and don't have a clue as how to use it. Michael Moore laid out a roadmap for salvaging the midterm elections and turning them into a landslide victory for the Democrats instead of what the pollsters and pundits are predicting. And of his five suggestions, remember this was number three. Announce a moratorium on all family home foreclosures. He went on to say on his website, last month, August, there were more home foreclosures than in any month in U.S. history. Worse than any month in the worst year ever, which was 2009 for home foreclosures. The bleeding hasn't stopped. It's only gotten worse. And now this week, two of the largest crime organizations who are throwing hundreds of thousands of people out of their homes, GMAC and J.P. Morgan Chase, and to that Bank America, have been forced to momentarily stop doing this. It turns out they don't really have the paperwork to prove they actually own these houses. It's madness. So if you do one thing for the middle class this week, do this. It would take an hour of your time to draw up the decree and issue it. We'd rather watch It's a Wonderful Life than watch Poltergeist. So he's saying, that's the end of it, so he's saying to the Democratic Party, just do this. Do this. Announce a moratorium. And then let the Republicans say, well, you can't do that. Now, obviously, with corporate shills like Steny Hoyer and the rest of the Democratic Party leadership, these mangy, bribe-hungry, blue-dog Democrats having so much say in the Democratic Party, this is never going to happen. Never going to happen. Last Sunday, Frank Rich and referred to all we have standing between us and the billionaires and corporate interests that have been steadily annexing the Tea Party movement and busily plotting to cash in their chips. If the GOP prevails, Wall Street potentates and corporate titans. The only thing standing between that and now are people like Alan Grayson. Alan Grayson, of course, is being attacked mercilessly. You know who his who he's running against? Who's mounted a challenge against him? I mean, it's the guy. I don't get this. I think the race is getting very close. He's referred to, his name is Dan Webster. He's referred to as Taliban Dan. He's part of the Christian Reconstruction Movement. He believes, wives, submit yourselves to your husband. That's in the Bible. Digby published at his website. Talking Points Memo is featuring an interesting article about Alan Grayson's kooky opponent, Daniel Webster. Seems he's keeping company with the Christian Reconstruction Movement, also known as the American Taliban. Listed in his official voter guide as a top supporter, Dan Webster, is a right-wing activist named David Barton, who has already come under scrutiny for addressing two white supremacist organizations. Barton claimed in both circumstances that he was unaware of the group's white supremacist ties, but that doesn't mean he's not possessive extreme views of his own. From 1998 to 2006, he served as vice chair of the Texas Republican Party, which is notorious for having one of the most zealously conservative platforms in the country. In 2004, for instance, the platform advocating the following. One, abolition of the IRS and the repeal of the 16th Amendment. That's the one about income tax. Number two, the elimination of the income tax, inheritance tax, gift tax, capital gains tax, corporate income tax, and payroll tax. Yee-hoo! Number three, an orderly transition to a system of private pensions based on the concept of individual retirement accounts and gradually phasing out Social Security. Four, the abolition of the Department of Education. Five, eliminating the government's right to restrict public display of the Ten Commandments. You're damn right! We want the Ten Commandments on every street corner in America! We gotta educate these ignorant Jews and Muslims and atheists and queers and get the Ten Commandments out there! The Texas Republican Party also opposes the legalization of sodomy? But boys, you do that in the privacy of your own home with your old ladies! Well, what do you mean? Oh, that's right. The legalization of sodomy for people other than opposite-sex couples. I get it. Okay. Just want to make sure. The Texas Republican Party also holds that homosexual behavior is contrary to the fundamental unchanging truths that have been ordained by the sky spook. Oh, I'm sorry. By God, recognized by our country's founders and shared by the majority of Texans. What? Homosexual behavior recognized by our country's founders. Let me introduce you to Alexander Hamilton. Let me introduce you, to Aaron Burr. Wouldn't these guys just pee themselves if they knew how many gay founding fathers, so to speak, put this country together? Huh? Oh, my God. So, anyway, the guy who's running against Alan Grayson is a right-wing nutcase. a right-wing nutcase. Last summer, Daniel Webster journeyed to South Korea on a religious mission, meeting with the country's president, other political and spiritual leaders. He was joined by Bill Gotthard, that's his name, the head of a $30 million Christian evangelical group. And this Christian group, he has sex regulations based on Old Testament commands. Under the section titled Six Purposes, Principles, and Keys to Fulfillment in the Marriage Relationship, he told married couples to abstain from physical relations. And he's got like, there are six or seven times here when no sex. And you won't believe this, but I'm going to share it with you when you come back. And this guy that I'm quoting is a good friend and mentor and provides money to the guy running against Alan Grayson in Central Florida. This is madness. It's just madness. Before the hour. So anyway, back to this. Alan Grayson's kooky, psychopathic opponent is a guy named Daniel Webster in Central Florida. And Alan Grayson, like in Florida, like Russ Feingold in Wisconsin, two absolute liberals. And I don't want to have a discussion about their respective positions vis-a-vis mine, perhaps, on the Israeli-Palestinian issue. That's not in this discussion. We can do that later. But here they are, two guys struggling to put the brakes on the capitalist thugs and banksters and liars and cheats and stinky sons of bitches who are destroying the country. Grayson's opponent is this guy, Daniel Webster, who listed on his official voter guide as a top supporter is a right-wing nutball named David Barton. Barton is the founder of the evangelical organization Wall Builders. He is also Glenn Beck's intellectual mentor. Okay? It's just, I don't know. Anyone who's followed Webster's career knows something. He's a Christian Reconstructionist from way back. He's a follower of one of those evangelical cult leaders, Bill Gotthard, or Gotthard, let's call it Gotthard, who's been training Christian Reconstructionists for decades with his so-called seminars. And he isn't the only one. Sarah Palin, Mike Huckabee. Anyway, Gotthard has some very unusual views, not the least of which is this. In his advanced seminars, Gotthard introduced sex regulations based on Old Testament commands under the session titled Six Purposes, Principles, and Keys to Fulfillment in the Marriage Relationship. He told married couples to abstain from sexual relations, one, during the wife's menstrual cycle, two, 7 days after the cycle ends, three, 40 days after the birth of a son, four, 80 days after the birth of a daughter, and five, the evening prior to worship. Some may even find the sexual guidelines found in his 1986 volume, Research and Principles of Life, Advanced Seminar Textbook, intrusive and offensive. What most would feel is personal and private between a couple and their physician, Mr. Gotthard spells out. On pages 170, 171, Gotthard suggests that a man keep track of his wife's menstrual cycle and use it as a reminder of the sufferings and deaths of Jesus. Oh, my God. You know, it's a good thing these people aren't primitive and backwards like those awful fundamentalist Muslims, huh? Now, how do you know that Webster, the guy running against Alan Grayson, is one of this freak's disciples? In the St. Petersburg Times, February 16th, 1997. Last summer, Daniel Webster journeyed to South Korea on a religious mission, meeting with the country's president and other political and spiritual leaders. He was joined by Bill Gotthard, the head of a $30 million Christian evangelical group. 4 months after the trip, Webster ascended to one of the most powerful positions in Florida, Speaker of the State House of Representatives. He brings with him 14 years of experience with Gotthard's Institute in Basic Life Principles, where Webster has not only attended seminars but also taught classes. Yada, yada, yada. The group preaches a literal interpretation of the Bible, including the belief that women should submit to their husband's authority. With programs for lawmakers, judges, doctors, juvenile delinquents, and homeschooling courses, the Institute's reach is wide. Webster is an enthusiastic supporter. His six children learn at home, taught by his wife, Sandy, using the Institute's curriculum. The family, which also is active in the Orlando Baptist Church, has participated in numerous Institute seminars over the past years. Oh, my God. This is a guy running against Alan Grayson. This is the guy that the Republican Party and the fundamentalist capitalist want to use to destroy a good and decent man, Alan Grayson, a man who truly, one of the few remaining, who is trying to resist, trying to put up resistance against this flood tide of Christian fundamentalism, capitalist, sick filth that is ruining the United States. Russ Feingold is facing the same kind of resistance in Wisconsin. I'm telling you, there's two choices. Go ahead, let these people take over and let the country tank and be replaced, our democratic system, what's left of it. I realize our system is totally polluted and corrupted. We need a revolution of ideas or a revolution of another type, just something. But two choices here coming up November 2nd. Let these religious pigs take over, and their capitalist masters will give them their marching orders and tell them what to do. And as long as the capitalists are satisfied, the Christian Reconstructionists will operate, run the society as they see fit. The capitalists will continue to make tremendous fortunes. So let these people in and face that with the hope that within 2 years the country will explode in resistance. A. B. Fight like hell to prevent this from happening, which would mean voting for Democratic candidates. Your choice. And then not even being sure that your vote will be counted the way you want it counted, the way you're voting. So. It's just, I don't know. What do we got next hour? Oh, my God, let me out of here. Next hour. What do we have next hour? Where'd it go? Well, I know we have, okay. We have a little bit more about the firefighters, and I got some letters about the family, the family that was burned out in Tennessee. And what else I got? A couple of emails specifically about the idea of letting the teabaggers take over. What else? I don't know. A bunch of stuff. Stick around. All right? Another hour to go. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. I got, like I mentioned earlier, I got several emails from folks about the house that burned down in Obion, Tennessee. And also somebody sent me a news item here. This is I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. The headline: after firefighters watched home burn, Obion County expands subscription-only fire service to more towns. I mean, here's what it says. As Think Progress reported yesterday, South Fulton Fire Department firefighters from Obion, Tennessee, last week stood by and watched as a family's home burned down. Because their services were available by subscription only, blah, blah, blah. And the family had not paid the $75 fee. Immediately, right-wing writers at the conservative movement's bulkhead magazine, The National Review, leapt to the defense of the county and argued in support of the notion that firefighting should be a public service available to all, regardless of ability to pay. In support of the notion, the National Review, right-wing writer, leapt to the defense of the county and argued in support of the notion, that firefighting should not be a public service available to all, regardless of ability to pay. Well, of course, that's what the right-wingers, that's what the teabaggers, this is what America's going to look like. However, now local news station ABC 7 in that area is reporting that Obion County Budget Committee met last night. Ta-da, 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 and has decided to expand the subscription-only fire service to additional towns. The television station reports that the committee, quote, passed an agreement yesterday to give all communities in the county the option of paying a subscription, end quote, to purchase fire service, essentially expanding the service that stood by and watched as the Kranich family's home and their dogs and cats burned to the ground. Union City Fire Department Chief Kelly Edmondson objects to the new expansion. He doesn't like this. He says, quote, "The best option is a true fire tax. It eliminates us having 911 or whoever check to say, are they covered? Are they not covered? The last thing a firefighter wants to do is not be able to help when they'd like to," end quote, Union City Fire Department Chief Kelly Edmondson. Now, according to documents prepared by the county in 2008, a stinking, rotten 13-cent increase in property taxes on each household would be all it would take to fund fire services for the towns within the county. 13-cent increase. Is that a month? Is it a year? If it's a month, oh my gosh, it's $1.50 a year. You see? You see how the teabaggers and the Atlas Shrugged crowd and the right wing and the neo-fascists and the capitalist supporters and the people that are now owned outright by corporate America. You see how they think? 13 cents. 13% tax, a 13-cent tax increase on each household in the county. This is from Skip. In Prescott, Arizona, writes, "Mike and Kathy, love the show. I want to say that as a former volunteer fireman, I would never have been able to stand by and watch that house in Tennessee burn. And I really do not think my fellow firefighters would have been able to do so either. I also understand the pressure the Tennessee firemen were under. Something needs to be done about this." Skip in Prescott. Yeah, something needs to be done about this. Something will be done about it. It'll be the application of the teabagger philosophy that you will pay, by God, you will pay, because we are not going to have a 13-cent tax increase. Oh, no. You will pay. And if you don't pay, if your house catches fire, it'll burn down. Now, pretty soon it'll be police protection, like we mentioned last night. Pretty soon it'll be, well, if you want police protection, you'll pay. So if I get robbed in the street, I can't call the cops? No, not unless you're a subscriber. Uh-huh. What happens if terrorists invade my village? Too bad! If you're not a subscriber, no military protection for you! But don't the soldiers take an oath? Not to protect and defend you! That's what George Bush said! No, no! All they have to protect and defend is the Constitution, dummy! Ah, I see. Carol writes, Mike, I was reading about the fire and the burning of this man's house. He is waiting to hear from the insurance company. It occurs to me, things being as they are, he might not be able to collect insurance because he forgot that lousy $75 tax. The insurance might see it as the equivalent of a pre-existing condition and not cover him. It would be just like them to do this. Just think, the right-wing nuts, the Tea Party, and the Republicans want to privatize everything, including the commons that we all use. Suppose you're out of work and have no money. Carried to the extreme, no police or fire department will show up. Even forgetting a small tax one time could find each of us having the same tragedy. The man living next door to this neighbor offered to pay the tax right there and then, but the fire department would not accept it. Would they still have let it burn had someone been in the fire? I guess, as things are now, we don't owe one another compassion or decency unless there is money on the table. Christ on a crutch. Carol. If there had been someone in the house, would the fire department let it burn? Well, in the first place, there's a good chance that they wouldn't have known. Somebody overcome with the smoke, lying on the floor, they have maybe 5 minutes. Or there is 5 minutes to determine whether or not that person is going to live or die. Maybe it's only 2 minutes. And it requires the kind of bravery. My son, Chris, was a fireman. He started out as a volunteer. And then he took all the exams and the tests. He became an EMS and an EMT or whatever. Then a firefighter. And he did that in South Carolina for what, Kathy? 3 years? And I cannot see my son, Chris, standing outside of a burning house and saying, well, Dad, I couldn't go in because they weren't subscribers. What happens, as Chris has told me, we have very little time. He's in nursing school now. We have very little time to get in there. No matter what the condition is, as long as it, we take some kind of precautions, we put on the mask, we do what we can, we help a brother, we get in there to find out, is there a kid in the back bedroom? Is there an old man in the basement? And the teabaggers and these goddamn right-wingers, these filthy Republicans, these filthy, stinking Ayn Rand libertarians, to answer your question, Carol, if there's a body in there, A, they would know. But if there is somebody in there, too bad. Burn. You didn't pay. Burn. Man, oh man, oh man. This is what the Republican, this is the conservative morality. This is what has happened. There is no morality anymore. It's totally an amoral country. And that is what capitalism has demanded. It's what they've gotten. Capitalism is amoral. It doesn't care if you live or die. You are simply a click, a cog, a cipher, a digit. And when it comes time to remove you, you will be removed. Whether it is as you're standing inside your burning house waiting for the fire department to rescue you because your legs are broken, or if you are waiting for a job, or if you're hoping for a medical procedure, or if you expect to have clean air to breathe and decent water to drink, it doesn't matter. Capitalism will devour you.
Yeah.
show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
We did not believe in the writing on the wall. We did our best work in the dark. We did our thinking on the run. We would hang together, or they hang us one by one.
21 past the hour, 22 past the hour, actually. A few more emails here on the house that burned down, the teabagger ultimate action. Tom in Joshua Tree, California writes, Mike, the Kranix house fire is only kindling for what excites those sadistic teabagger Ayn Rand freaks. When you think about it, these are the same bastards who ran the Salem witch trials, where thousands of innocent women and children were burned alive, and many men, too, who consorted for nothing but to satisfy the cruel and warped insanities of their holy tribunals. So, here they are again, burning the place down in order to make their crummy little presence known. But this time, they're letting laissez-faire government do their dirty work for them, while they sit back and gloat. This can get out of hand real quick, like a spark in a dry forest. Genocides always begin when one side consolidates against another. And when Comcast takes market share, the psychic plane of these nutjob Beckites will become consolidated too, and that's when the trouble really starts. The Jonestowns, the witch burnings, Rwanda, Jews, liberals, non-believers, how do we stop them? They just keep coming, like twisted DNA devils devoid of heart and mind, everywhere, resistant to all forms of reason, knowledge, facts, history, or reality. Scary stuff. Tom in Joshua Tree, California. His reference to Comcast was the story we did, Monday? About Comcast and Comcast firing a $200,000 a year employee because Bill O'Reilly and Fox News demanded that the person be fired. Oh, man. Bruce in California writes, Mike, I share your outrage at what happened to the Kranick family, but I've heard an error repeated that the firefighters were a private company. They were city firefighters supported by city taxes. It's just that they offer their service to county residents for a fee. It doesn't make the situation better for the family or lessen the shock and anger that it happened, but you're targeting a private group that doesn't exist. It's the city that deserves the ire. Or fire. Ire. Bruce in California. Didn't know that. Thanks, Bruce. From Prairie 2. Oh, now this is about the suggestion I've been making, somewhat out of frustration and somewhat out of a pre-Schadenfreude feeling that I think would develop, about letting these teabag Republican bastards have control of the country for the next 2 years. Things will get so bad that the American people will rise up either literally or figuratively and remove these people permanently from the political process. And, a lot of people are disagreeing that. Prairie 2 says letting the teabaggers in isn't going to result in their agenda being passed. It will result in the adoption of the agenda of the people who hold the strings attached to their bags. That would consolidate power in the hands of people who aren't going to let go of it. He's referring, of course, to the capitalists, the, once the teabaggers, the useful idiots do take power. Prairie 2's position is they'll do the damage. And, yeah, maybe they will be removed from office, but the real power brokers will remain forever and ever, world without end. Amen. Which brings me to step two of what I've been suggesting, and that is an overthrow of the system, either peacefully or using other means. I would certainly hope it'd be peaceful, but I don't think the American people will stand what the teabaggers have in store and what the capitalists, the corporatists, have in store for us. Gary in El Paso writes, Mike, while I understand where you're coming from when you speak of letting the Republicans win in November, I have a very real fear they will somehow manage to arrange things so they can never be kicked out. What say you? Probably so, from the standpoint of trying to remove them electorally or peacefully, which then brings up the other alternative. Andrew in Chicago writes, Mike, the way these geriatric teabaggers protest big government while riding Medicare-provided rascal scooters and huffing Medicare-provided oxygen really is one of the more ironic things I've ever seen. Let's see how much they enjoy hobbling around or gasping for breath if they get what they supposedly want this November. The Tea Party is full of incompetence and incontinence. Andrew.
Ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Brian in Portland. Mike, I like your show. Tonight you said words to the effect, and I think he meant last night, you said words to the effect, go ahead and vote the Tea Party in, and we'll all learn our lesson. Well, I had exactly the same thought on election night 2000, which was, well, on the bright side, this finally means the end of the conservative movement. Bush will do whatever he wants. The nation will tank. And finally, once and for all, we can get back to government for the greatest good, or greater good, end quote. That's what I thought then. I could not have been more wrong. I fear that your comment tonight, should it come to pass, will backfire in ways we rational folk can't even imagine. Brian in Portland. Well, I, you know, maybe I should concede the point. Maybe it's not a good idea. I've been meaning to get to this. Let me see if I can squeeze it in this last hour. This was at, I think Think Progress and CBS News, a couple of things here that kind of tie together. Alaskan teabagger and Sarah Palin anointed the guy that defeated Murkowski, who herself is not, Lisa Murkowski is no great statesman either, just another Republican shill. But along comes Joe Miller, who makes Lisa Murkowski look like a liberal, right? And so Sarah Palin, being the kingmaker that she is now for the big money, yes, indeed, why should I stay as governor of Alaska? Hell, I can get out here and make millions! And she did. Sure, that's what it's all about. Anyway, Joe Miller, who, big-time Alaskan teabagger, big-time Alaskan libertarian, big-time I don't take no government nothing. Joe, you're a goddamn liar, as all you people are. Joe Miller's wife was on unemployment a few years ago, and Joe Miller accepted farm subsidies. And it's my understanding that Joe Miller's wife's employer was Joe Miller. As Al Babe writes, so it's not that these teabagging hypocrites actually, really, honestly believe the tripe they loudly spew. It turns out that people like Jolt and Joe Miller are just loudmouth, sanctimonious, hypocritic, lying bullies. They're a sham, a fake. The problem is, you see, The simple-minded, simpleton teabagger folks have as much depth of thought as the mahogany veneer on a cheap guitar, except, of course, they're less musical. They spout all this shallow hyperbole about liberty and freedom and all that other meaningless crap, and they don't seem to have the cognitive ability to compare two things that are plainly identical, like the fact that Joe Miller is loudly against these so-called entitlements, unless they're for him and his old lady. Oh, my God. You know, you can deal with zealots. They're usually mindless followers who feel something more than they actually think about it. They have a sense of privileged entitlement in that they feel that their ideas and ideals are the right ones, the ones dictated by God. And they have decided that they'll make the moral law for the rest of us, right? But these teabagging so-called leaders are walking, talking straw men. They are their own fallacious argument against the things they supposedly, passionately believe in. So are they hypocrites? Liars? Just not that bright? All three? The story on Joe Miller is this Caroli again at, or Caroli, I should say, at Think Progress. If unemployment benefits were purely state-based, bazillions of unemployed would have been out of options 26 weeks after they lost their jobs. Given that we have millions who have run out after 99 weeks, and of those 99 weeks, 73 of them were funded by the federal government, imagine the disaster in store. Yet this is exactly what Joe Miller argues. Miller's running on a self-described constitutional conservative platform, arguing that the nation must return to the principles and powers penned by the founding fathers to save the country from bankruptcy, putting an end to entitlements on a national level and empowering states have been a key message in his campaign. And in the weeks leading up to the admission about his wife's unemployment history, Miller has finessed his message on unemployment benefits, saying he's not opposed to them, but that they should be managed by the states, not the feds. But Joe, using the doctrinaire diktats of right-wing conservatism, the states are broke, pal. So wait, what's that you say? What admission about his wife's unemployment history? Well, in case you missed it, Miller held the magistrate position for the district court out of Fairbanks June 31st, 2002 through June 1st, 2004, or June 21st, 2002 through June 1st, 2004, earning a total of $71,418. Kathleen Miller worked as a part-time clerk for him from June to December of 2002. June, July, August, September, October, November, December. Well, that's only 7 months. According to a resume she submitted to the state last year when she pursued an appointment to the Alaska Judicial Council. Notice all these state jobs. After she left her clerk job, she went on state unemployment. Joe Miller acknowledged this in a statement. Here's what he said, quote, "My wife Kathleen did work for me as a magistrate judge, clerk, secretary, while I was a part-time federal magistrate judge from 2002 to 2004. Before 2004, there was a long-standing practice, both in Fairbanks as well as other areas in the United States, that due to the time commitments of being a lawyer and a part-time federal magistrate judge, the same individuals that worked in your private law offices also worked in your federal magistrate office, many of these being family members. Have I got you confused yet? No, let me go on. Before even applying for the Fairbanks magistrate judgeship, I spoke with members of the federal court concerning the employment of Kathleen. It was confirmed that she could work for me in my office. After leaving my office, Kathleen did receive unemployment benefits for a short period of time. I don't begrudge her right to unemployment benefits." Carole says. What I resent is this guy spouting off about what deadbeats people on unemployment are and how we don't need government and we don't need safety nets and we should all just bootstrap ourselves to wild success. That's what I resent. Because when somebody's boot is on your neck, what you need is a hand up, not a kick in the face. It is this hypocrisy and selfishness that makes loathing of the teabaggers and their candidates so visceral. All the hand-wringing over debt left to future generations is pure nonsense. But all it would take to fix it, all it would take to fix it, is a small tax increase. One that, by the way, is long overdue. So, congratulations to Carol Lee. What is it with the cognitive disconnect in these people? You think they're aware of their own hypocrisy? Joe Miller doesn't sound like the rest of the people in Alaska, so how did he even get to where he is? Are you looking forward to November? There is the possibility that the voice of the people in America will finally smash the rumblings about how the Democrats are in trouble. Anyone with an ounce of common sense can look and see that certainly not fast enough for most of us. The country is slowly, in little bits, improving a bit. We'll see. And from CBS News, I love this one. Tea Party-backed Joe Miller received subsidies, farm subsidies, for land in Kansas. You filthy, hypocritical bastard, Miller. You really are. You really are a skunk. I'll share this one with you when we come back. Joe Miller! Teabagger! Republican, get the government on my back, except for my farm subsidies in Kansas. Forget, tomorrow and Friday, Brad Friedman will be sitting in for me, so be nice to him, okay? All right, Republican Senate candidate Joe Miller, big right-wing libertarian teabagger, hate the government, government bad, unless I'm getting the government money. Okay, so his wife was on unemployment. He worked as a he worked in a public job as a what was he, a judge, a magistrate or something. I don't think they have private magistrates yet, you lying bastard. But anyway, when back in the 90s, Joe Miller received federal farm subsidies for land that he owned in Kansas. Now, when he ran in the GOP primary in Alaska, he got more than $500,000 in support from the Tea Party Express, right? That's one of those front organizations run by the Koch brothers. And he campaigned in opposition to out-of-control spending by incumbents in Congress. Oh, the bastards. The acknowledgement of the Miller campaign that he accepted farm subsidies follows a story by the Alaska Dispatch, which had to use a Freedom of Information Act to get the information. Miller's not going to say this. He's not going to stand up there and say, yeah, my wife is on unemployment. I worked for the state. I had farm subsidies back in the 90s on land I owned down in the lower 40 or lower 48 or whatever. I don't know. I'm not from here. I don't know what y'all call it. But anyway, Freedom of Information Act. Received more, according to the Freedom of Information Act information, Miller received more than $7,000 in subsidies. And a blog last week reported Miller, who's an attorney, received subsidies for land in Alaska. A story that the Miller campaign called, that's manufactured. Oh, dip. A spokesman for Miller said yesterday that Mr. Miller is, well, he's not against all federal spending. Where'd you get that idea? And some crops on his Kansas land were eligible for aid. The crops were eligible, not Joe. Hell no, Joe doesn't believe in this. But the corn wanted money, and so did the soybeans. So we, you know. The Miller spokesman said none of this has to do with Miller's belief that the nation must find ways to address its deficit. Yeah! Oh, okay! Just go find it somewhere else, right, Joe? A spokesman for Lisa Murkowski, who is running a writing campaign against Smokin' Joe, said that Joe should have spoken up and acknowledged the subsidies earlier. The spokesman for Murkowski said it speaks to Miller's character that he did not. Oh, really? Joe Miller has character? Oh, well. So Miller held the magistrate position for the district court out of Fairbanks. District court. Is that federal? I don't know. It looks like old Joe just had his hand in Uncle Sam's pants pocket any chance he could do it, right? Because the money that his wife received, unemployment, didn't it just say here that it was federal unemployment? No? Yes? What difference does it make, right? Who paid for it, Joe? Who paid your farm subsidy? Who paid your wife's unemployment? Who paid your paycheck when you were a magistrate? Huh, Joe? Or was that all pro bono work as a magistrate? Ah, you're a lawyer. Every single teabag candidate, I don't care if they're running for county commission, senator, representative, it matters not. Every single one of them is a liar and a hypocrite. And their effect on our system, as corrupted as our system already is, when all these bastards get elected, which the polls say they will, their effect on our system will be the same as the effect on a loaf of date nut bread that you leave on the counter overnight and let the roaches get to. When you wake up in the morning, guess what you're going to find? Ooh, it's too horrible to contemplate. But have you noticed this? I know the teabaggers, the ones that, sit around with their oxygen tubes and their scooters and say, oh, get the federal government out of everything. Where's my Medicare check? God damn it. And my pension, who's guaranteeing my pension? I know that the teabaggers, if you try to explain to them the stupidity of their own position and the hypocrisy of the people designated by capitalist corporate America to lead them into a blind tunnel where they can all be gassed, you can't explain it to them. Their brains are in lockdown. Oh, I love Glenn Beck. Hey, thank you, Glenn, for being our voice. Oh, we love you. Meanwhile, Glenn is just hosing them left and right. He's their religious guru now. He's their political guru. Hey, Glenn, get your blackboard out and show me again how you're going to steal money from anybody that comes within 80 miles of you, you bunch of hypocritical dumbasses. Well, I'm certainly pissed off. That's a good place to leave the program. Don't forget, Brad Friedman, tomorrow and Friday. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.